Okay, well, I now have 3:30, so we'll go ahead and get started. I want to thank everyone who called in. I hope you can hear me. The purpose of this call is really to just try to make sure everybody is up to speed, depending on what type of provider you are, on the latest information that we have, the latest direction and the latest guidance that's available for each particular type of service. Of course, the governor's order, I'm sorry, the director of health's order yesterday that was announced by the governor has, for skilled nursing facilities and assisted living, has received the most attention, but there are also guidelines that preceded that and that also exist out there that we need to discuss and make sure everybody is familiar with them. Instead of starting on the governor's order, I think we'll start with some of the other guidelines. But before even getting to that, I have to point out that the governor had another press conference today announced that, as I understand it, I did not view the press conference, but as I understand it, he announced that there would be further orders coming out that related to visitation, as the one yesterday did, and possibly there would be some, as I understand it, requests for lifting surveys or not doing surveys. I'm not sure how that would fare, but the big news really today is that they are apparently ordering, after the end of the school day on Monday, a three-week school closure, which, while it doesn't directly relate to long-term services and supports, school closure means that there are people who work in long-term services and supports who are going to have their kids home. And that's a workforce issue that we were aware of, but we're hoping was not going to occur, at least not quite this quickly. So that's a concern. It's a huge concern. It does not have anything to do with the guidance that we're going to talk about, but that is obviously something that's going to have to be addressed and is a major issue. So first off, I'd like to turn to assisted living. And as I mentioned, the governor's order applies to assisted living, applies to licensed residential care facilities specifically. So it's any type of assisted living that is licensed, whether it's the provider's participating in the assisted living waiver or not. But aside from that, we don't have any of the federal guidelines that are applicable to federally regulated provider types. So there are no equivalents to some of the other guidelines that we're going to talk about briefly. But the order does apply, and our feeling has been that the guidance for skilled nursing facilities should be viewed as, even though it's not technically applicable to assisted living, it's good recommendations for assisted living, maybe with some slight modifications based on the difference of the population served, but is still a good thing to be aware of. So if you're an assisted living provider, aside from the governor's order,
the conference is now being recorded.
You should also be familiar with the guidelines for skilled nursing facilities. So, and we'll talk more, obviously, about the governor's order momentarily. Let's turn to providers for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Here we're talking about both ICFs and waiver providers. And so the ICFs, although, again, there are no specific guidelines from CMS about ICFs, they are, in some sense, similar to skilled nursing facilities or assisted living, although obviously many ICFs are much smaller and are serving a different population. So again, in our view, the guidance for skilled nursing facilities and assisted living should be considered by ICF providers as some information about how they should respond to COVID-19, even though, again, they're not mandatory. Now, the Department of Developmental Disabilities is coming out with some guidance. We've seen a draft of it. It is not very specific or very detailed. It does talk about limiting visitation, things of that nature, but only in a very, temporarily stopping day services and community outings. It's just that vague. I mean, it just says that and doesn't give any detail about how to go about doing that. And so from that perspective, it probably makes sense again to refer to the guidance for other types of healthcare services. In the waiver setting, particularly if it's not residential and it's being provided in people's homes, then although again, there aren't any specific guidelines for that. There are guidelines for home health, which is a different service but similar, that would be instructive and helpful, I think, for providers in that area, and we'll cover those guidelines as well. So then turning to home health specifically, here we do have guidance from CMS, because home health, Medicare certified home health, is a federally regulated service. And so the guidance there that you want to be aware of is QSO 2018, and you can just Google QSO-20-18, and that will take you to this particular document. It's a seven-page letter from CMS that goes through a variety of recommendations for home health agencies. Now, we call these recommendations, but as they come from CMS, they're almost in the nature of regulations, because CMS is expecting providers to pay attention to them. And again, for providers who are not Medicare-certified home health agencies but are providing waiver services, whether it's DD waiver services or waiver services in the aging arena, these guidelines would also be appropriate, or at least appropriate for consideration. And we have somebody who is not muted, so if you could please mute, that would be very helpful. Okay. I'm going to try to mute everyone, because we're having a conversation there. Hopefully that doesn't also mute me. Maddie, if you're on, if you could please text me if you don't hear me.
You are now in silent mode.
Okay, so we're now in silent mode, hopefully not including me. But anyway, so this guidance, which is 20-18, discusses screening of patients for COVID-19. And so obviously for a home health provider, if you're going into someone's home, you're going to need to know if the person has or might have COVID-19. So there are screening criteria there, which are basically the same criteria that are used for screening in all settings. International travel to one of the countries that's been affected, signs and symptoms of respiratory infection, including fever, the contact with someone who has COVID-19 or is ill with respiratory illness, or is residing in a community where community-based spread of COVID-19 is occurring. And as we see the growth across the state We had an additional case today. We can see that there will also be a growth in community spread. So the guidance speaks to what should be done when you're caring for someone who has been through this screening identified as possibly having COVID-19. There is discussion about restricting staff who have who basically fail the screening and what you should do if someone comes down with symptoms of respiratory illness while working. This is common guidance across various provider types. So again, everybody should be cognizant of this kind of information, because it deals with any healthcare worker, GSP, whatever setting they may be in. There's also some provisions about whether people should be sent to the hospital or not, and that is not an open and shut proposition in home care. There are people, according to the experts, who can be safely and appropriately managed at home if they can be isolated, if their symptoms are not so severe as to require hospitalization. And this is a somewhat controversial issue across the board, but it is one where CMS has come down pretty strongly in favor of, we don't want to hospitalize everybody who has a respiratory infection or even that has COVID-19. So there is some discussion of that. Then there is discussion in the home of what the appropriate infection control procedures ought to be. And it goes into some length about that, as well as part of that being the use of personal protective equipment, when and how that should be used. And there's some fairly extensive discussion about putting on and taking off or donning and doffing of PPE and how that should be accomplished to minimize the transmission to the healthcare worker, but also potentially to family members who have not contracted it. Then there's a section about discontinuing precautions and when to do that, and it's basically a clinical determination and one that would be also involve the local health authorities. And then there's some language about investigation or surveys, of home health agencies. And here we have some differentiation among the various provider types, because not everybody is subject to the same kind of surveys. But here CMS does discuss the issues around the personal protective equipment and the lack thereof, and basically directing surveyors to cut some slack in that regard. And then there's a listing, which is very important, of a variety of resources, from mainly from CDC, but also from other agencies that might be helpful. I should mention in this connection that there is a specific program ladder that applies to all provider types. And again, this is all federally regulated provider types, but it's of interest to everyone. And that's QSO 20-17. Again, 20-17. Again, you can Google that and find it on the CMS website. And 20-17 discusses personal protective equipment and the recognition by the federal government that it isn't available to everyone or there are shortages, and some steps that can be taken that maybe don't meet the full rigor of normal infection control procedures. But because of the emergency situation that we have, that would be, the next best thing. So I would commend 20-17 to your review as well. The next set of guidance that I'd like to discuss here is for hospice. QSO 20-16. Again, 20-16. Again, you can Google it like all the others and find it on the CMS website. The one thing I'd like to mention first off, relating to the hospice guidance, is an issue, a cross-cutting issue across also skilled nursing facilities. And we have heard that they're, based on the governor's order, I'm sorry, the director of health's order, there have been some reports, unfortunately fairly widespread reports, of skilled nursing facilities refusing entry to hospice personnel who have patients in the facility. This is based on a misreading and of the governor's order, I'm sorry, the director of health's order, and that we'll discuss in a little greater detail as we get to that, but it is not the intent to say that people who are hospice personnel should not be allowed or considered visitors and should not be allowed into skilled nursing facilities, quite the opposite. And in fact, in 20-16, again, coming from CMS, not the state, but CMS says, I'm going to scroll to it here so I can read it to you. If hospice care is provided in a nursing home, we have advised nursing homes. Now, that's debatable to what extent they've been heard, but we have advised nursing homes that hospice workers should be allowed entry, provided that hospice staff is following the appropriate CDC guidelines for transmission-based precautions and using PPE properly. Now, another piece of that that isn't mentioned here specifically, but would really fall under this and under the guidelines is the infection control guidelines is screening. So screening is something that, as we'll talk about, applies to everyone who comes into a skilled nursing facility, including their own staff, and it also includes contract folks like hospice personnel. It also includes government personnel that are authorized to come in. So we'll talk about that a little bit more later, but I wanted to really clarify that the that this notion of excluding hospice is wrong, both under the state and the federal, more significantly, the federal guidelines. So anyway, the hospice guidelines are similar to home health in the areas where it addresses hospice that is provided at home, but there are also provisions that are somewhat similar to the skilled nursing facility provisions when it addresses inpatient hospice services. So this is done in a question and answer, format. There is the screening provisions that are exactly the same as in home health and in other settings, in skilled nursing as an example, except that for hospice, if we're talking about an inpatient hospice, then the same screening requirements would apply to visitors as well as patients, which would be the case for the home health setting. There's also some language, likewise, to home health about staff and screening staff and what should be done there, and if someone comes down with something. Then there's some discussion about infection control in an inpatient unit, which again is the same guidance that would apply to skilled nursing facilities in that regard. Hospitalization language is there. Discontinuation of precautions when a person gets better. There's also some provisions about restricting visitation. And that is less specific than it is for skilled nursing facilities, and with good reason, because, of course, we're talking about end of life, and that is a one of the exceptions to the skilled nursing facility restrictions. There's some other language here about that's, again, similar to home health, about the precautions to be taken when taking care of someone in their home, putting on and taking off the personal protective equipment, considerations for discharge, which again goes back to, okay, how sick is the person? Can they be managed at home? Can they not? The question, and again, it's a clinical determination there. So those guidelines, and then of course there's the whole set of resources which are similar to what is in the home health guidance. So again, any hospice providers should very carefully familiarize themselves with those guidelines, because those are the rules of the road as they exist today. One thing that we do know, though, is this is a constantly changing environment, frustratingly so, of course, because it's daily. Watch for communications about new guidelines or revisions to guidelines that come out. I think at this point we'll turn to the governor's order. I'm sorry, once again, I called the governor. The governor announced it yesterday, but it really came from and was signed by the Director of Health, along with Dr. Amy Acton, along with the Director of Veterans Services. And the reason why Veterans Services is included is because they're covering the two veterans homes that we have in Ohio, in Sandusky and Georgetown, as well as the licensed and certified facilities throughout the state. So, in looking at the director's order, it is really about restricting access. That's what it's all about. Now, as we've discussed in other contexts, there's really a lot more to the response to COVID-19 than restricting access. That is a key part in trying to avoid spreading COVID-19. Or respiratory infections in general to the vulnerable populations and facilities, but it is by no means the only part. So the key CMS guidance here, which goes into the whole array of issues that we covered specific to home care and hospice, is 20-14. Again, B-14. And there is a revised version of this that came out on March 9th. So that is the one that you're looking for. If somehow one pops up that is not the March 9th one, it's not correct. And the March 9th one is loaded with red language, red being the changes from the previous version that came out about a week before that. And there's a lot of language in that was added to QSO 20-14, dealing with limiting of visitors and restricting of visitors and the processes involved with that, which unfortunately there are some differences between what is there in the CMS guidance and also in the guidance that the American Healthcare Association came out with. And what the state promulgated yesterday, but also all of the stuff about monitoring staff and what should be done, transferring people to the hospital, et cetera, are all in 20-14. And you need to, as a skilled nursing provider, review that information. I also would commend it to our assisted living providers as well. Knowing that the population is different, there's more movement, there's more independence, there's more involvement with the community. So there are some different issues about, going in and out of the facility and things like that. But a lot of the things are also transfer over. So let's talk about the governor's order, director's order. There are really five operative paragraphs to it. There's a sixth one that talks about complying with the infection control requirements in the administrative code, which are the licensure rules that everybody has always had to comply with. So we won't go through that, but we'll go through the five operative paragraphs that are new and different. The first paragraph says that facilities, and this is again referring both to RCFs and to licensed skilled nursing facilities, or quote-unquote nursing homes in the parlance of the Ohio Revised Code, are to restrict access only to those personnel who are absolutely necessary for the operation of the homes. And then they go on to define who people who are absolutely necessary include. And it says include but may not be limited to home staff, contracted and emergency health care providers. And here is where we come in with the hospice. So it's pretty clear, even in that language, and this order is not a model of clarity, but in that provision, hospices have contracts with skilled nursing facilities to provide hospice services to patients in the skilled nursing facility that have elected that service. And so they are a contracted provider. So the contract also included in people who are absolutely necessary are contractors conducting critical on-site maintenance, and governmental representatives and regulators and their contractors. So we'll talk a little bit more about those, some of those categories of people, but those are the folks who have access to the facility, that is unrestricted other than because of screening. So paragraph 2 of the order then goes into the screening part, which is, again, similar to what we see in all of the CMS guidance, and it in fact references CMS, CDC, and the Department of Health screening guidance. I'm not sure that there's really a lot of distinction between the screening guidances. Oh, going back to paragraph 1, I guess I subconsciously wanted to excise this sentence out of the first paragraph. But the last sentence of the first paragraph says, included, and so these would be people who are considered absolutely necessary or basically allowed to have access. Included are also no more than one visitor per resident per day, except for end-of-life situations. So this language suggests that a resident could have a visitor every single day. Every resident could have one visitor aside from any of these other, you know, staff personnel and whatnot. They could have one visitor per day, and then if it was an end-of-life situation, that rule wouldn't even apply, and they could have more than one visitor. This is a concern, a huge concern, because the CMS guidance has, and this is 20-14 again, has in it a very detailed explanation of the kind of the hierarchy of visiting. And they do it by restricted, which is people who don't meet the screening criteria and can't come in the door, regardless of who they are, staff, government officials, anybody else. No one can come in if they don't meet, if they fail the screening criteria. Then there's limited. And limiting means that the person should only be allowed to come into the facility under certain circumstances, such as end of life, or when a visitor is essential for the resident's emotional well-being and care. In other words, it's an as-needed basis, and it is not, you know, you get one per day. It's none is the default, and then if someone is in one of these dire situations, then they could have visitors, a visitor, multiple visitors, it doesn't say, but that would be allowed. And then under other circumstances, they talk about discouraging visits, which of course is an interesting proposition, but that's what they say. Now, the rub comes in when we talk about when is visiting limited, in other words, only as a super necessary basis. And that what the guidance says, which I think is not right, is that if the limiting would occur in facilities that are in counties or counties adjacent to other counties where there is a COVID-19 case. Well, the reality of it is that's a ever-changing, moving target. So as of 2 days ago, Cuyahoga County. As of yesterday, Stark County. As of today, Trumbull County. And at the same time, each of those has all their adjacent counties. So we've now, in the space of 3 days, tripled the number of counties that are affected under that criterion. Reality is, every other place in the state could well have undiagnosed COVID cases. So, and those will probably be coming out over the next number of days. So the notion that we can sort of draw county lines around this doesn't make much sense. Our thought, and this was certainly HCA's recommendation, is to apply the limited visiting to everyone, throughout the state. And again, both in skilled and assisted living. Now, the order is more liberal than that, or more permissive than that, because of this one visitor per resident per day language. We went back bright and early this morning to the state and various state officials and said, you know, this isn't going to fly because it isn't as restrictive as the CMS guidance. It is not as restrictive as what providers are doing out there, and it is not safe. And the state's answer was, well, that's a minimum standard, and if providers want to establish a more stringent standard, they're welcome to do that, and we have no problem with that, and would support it, in fact. And my response to that was, so long as this language is in here, then families, and we hear that this is happening already because this was highly publicized, families will see it or hear about it and say, hey, you know, I've got my one visit and I'm coming. My advice to the state, and we'll see what happens when these additional orders end up being issued, is to take that language out. They were also talking about issuing some kind of a clarification that says that, you know, providers can establish more stringent standards, but that still leaves it on the provider as being, you know, the kind of bad guy who is not allowing the visitation, when in fact it really comes from the federal government. And I would note as a footnote to that that, you know, last night in his speech, President Trump referred to medically necessary visitors. So he's even establishing a perhaps even a higher standard than the existing CMS guidance, and certainly above the health department. So anyway, they then, in paragraph two, as I said, speak to screening. And the screening is, again, similar. The only difference in the screening here compared to what is in the CMS guidance is that they specify what a fever is, 100.4 degrees. Just the term fever is used in the CMS. So in some sense, that's more stringent too, because CMS is more stringent because a fever can exist at a lower temperature. But in any event, that is what they put in here. It does not say that temperatures are to be taken. That is their intent, but for some reason they did not write it. They put assessing visitors and personnel for cough, shortness of breath, and body temperatures of 100.4 degrees and higher. That is, and they claim that should tell us that they intend for everybody to have their temperature taken. And when I say everybody, that means everybody who's coming in. Now, it wouldn't apply to a resident who has gone out and then come back, but it would apply to any of the staff, contractors, government officials, any of that. And just speaking to government officials, some questions had come up from members about ombudsmen, about surveyors, and them refusing to be screened. The official direction from the state is that they are to be screened. Now, the screening criteria are as established by CMS, not some other screening criteria that the provider might decide to apply. For example, requiring them to wear masks throughout the building is not something that's mandated anyplace, and would be above and beyond. If they have signs and symptoms, they shouldn't be in the building. They should go home. That's the direction. I want to get that out there so that everybody understands that if there is an issue with any surveyor, with any ombudsman, then we need to hear about it at OHCA, or if you're a member of another association, you know, contact your association, and that needs to get to either the health department or the Department of Aging so that they can address that with those staff, because that's not what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to submit to the screening. So then the third paragraph of this order is about restricting access, and it speaks to as few points of entry as possible, with the Department of Health recommending one point of entry. That sort of makes sense if you're talking about screening people. If they can get in a lot of different ways, it becomes difficult to screen them. The HCA and NCAL went a step further to say that everyone should wash or sanitize their hands immediately upon entering the facility. That is not part of any of the governmental guidance, but it seems like it could be a best practice, and probably it is a best practice. Obviously, the government, all levels of government, recommend frequent hand sanitation. The paragraph also says that this point of entry thing does not apply to emergency ingress or egress. The next item talks about taking ID from people who enter. And it says restrict access only to those persons who produce legal, federal, or state-issued identification and provide their phone number and address. Now, this is really seems to be more pointed at sort of the official visitor, if you will, but it doesn't say that. It says those persons. So it's really broader than that, and I think what they intend here is for it to apply to visitors as well. And the idea here is really about tracing. So let's say someone comes down with COVID in the facility, or you know, even outside of a facility in a home care setting, they want to be able to figure out who that person has come into contact with. So that's why they want this stuff tracked, so they can then look at the log and say, okay, you know, Janie Jones came to visit her mom, and her mom ended up getting sick. So we need to reach out to Janie and find out how she is and anyone else who may have been in contact with Janie. So that provision is in there, and it requires logging and maintaining that log for 6 months. So we're hopefully by 6 months, we're past this problem. Then there's the last provision that talks about allowing residents, which of course they would have this ability and right to do at any time anyway, to go home. That's recognized in accordance with applicable state and federal law. And then it says, understanding that residents that then return to the homes while this order is in effect are subject to the directives above. We asked about that because the question there is, okay, are we saying that, say someone goes home, stays for a week, and then decides to come back to a facility, whether it's skilled, assisted living, could even be a DD facility, but in that case, this isn't specifically applicable, but it's still a good question. So what does subject to the directives above mean? Does that suggest that these individuals should be screened? And the answer from the state, we asked this question of them specifically this morning, the health department, and they said, no, we don't want you to screen them or keep them out if they have signs and symptoms or any of the other criteria. Obviously, that would go into their assessment and their care planning, but it's not a we don't want them to be screened. And there was a fairly heated, maybe cold response from health about this. They are taking a very firm view of the federal guidelines, the provisions in the federal guidelines that talk about when people should go to the hospital and when they should come back to, in this case, a skilled nursing facility. And that view is basically, if the person isn't sick enough that they really need to be in the hospital, leaving aside what they're sick from, then they can go back to the skilled nursing facility. The skilled nursing facility should take them back, or they should stay there to begin with. They shouldn't go to the hospital. Now, that then brings into question the ability to follow the isolation procedures and precautions. Obviously, in the home care setting, we don't have that in terms of things like negative pressure isolation rooms. And they've sort of translated that over to the facility setting in the 20-17 QSO, where there is some discussion of, well, if you don't have an isolation room, then put the person in a private room and close the door and use personal protective equipment, et cetera. So that then raises the question, well, what if the facility, because of the circumstances we're in today on the market, can't get and doesn't have the necessary PPE? What if they don't have a private room where they can put the person if they're coming from the hospital and they have and they still have active COVID? Maybe they're just not super sick. Those things would seem to suggest that that facility could turn down that admission, because they are not capable of caring for the person in accordance with the rules. And that would not be any different than what we see in the world pre-COVID-19, where people might have an infection that is beyond the capability of the facility to deal with, the C. diff perhaps, MRSA, depending on the capabilities of the facility. And, you know, I had a little bit of a sidebar conversation with Dr. Mary at the Department of Medicaid this afternoon, and frankly, she completely agrees with that analysis, even though the health department's being a little more intransigent about it. So that is what's in the joint director's order. The last thing I would say about this is that we certainly would recommend that you continue to follow more stringent visitation requirements than are in the order if you're a facility-based setting. And if there, of course, you're going to get pushback, or you may well get pushback from families. And so the answer to that is two things. One, we've got federal guidance above and beyond what the state has said, that the federal government is saying we should limit visitation beyond the one person per day thing. And secondly, that the Department of Health has said, and they would not dispute this, the Department of Health has said that that is a minimum standard and that providers or facilities are welcome to establish more stringent standards. Now, we hope that we will get some better guidance and more something in writing from the state that says that, but that's the situation we're in now. But frankly, and just to wrap it up, we're all in this together. We all have a part to play in trying to keep this disease at bay as much as possible, to try to keep our particular patients, residents, clients, consumers as safe as possible and not infected. So we need to keep that as our pole star that we're looking for. And everything else, quite frankly, we're in an emergency, people, and everything else is secondary. So thank you all for tuning in. I hope this has been helpful to you. If you have questions, I know everybody's on mute for this, but if you have questions, please feel free to contact us at OHCA or your own individual associations that you may be a member of. If you're not a member of any, feel free to contact us. You can also contact your local health department. They should be up on all of this, and even the state health department if you'd like to go that direction. So, again, thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and have a good day.